Cleaning out the underbrush of those things left over from the past is important to make sure that the way forward can be clearly seen, and whatever debates that we're about to have will be debates that won't be tainted with having confusing statutes on the books.
On the books, but out of date. This is the Politics Podcast from WUNC. I'm Jeff Tiberi.
Good afternoon. Before I take questions, I want to give you a progress report to the nation on where we stand 65 days into office here.
Last week, President Joe Biden held his first press conference as Commander-in-Chief. During the hour-long event, he fielded questions on immigration, vaccinations, the economy. Then came a question from CNN's chief White House correspondent, Caitlin Collins, on the filibuster.
Regarding the filibuster, at John Lewis's funeral, President Barack Obama said he believed the filibuster was a relic of the Jim Crow era. Do you agree?
Yes.
If not, why not abolish it if it's a relic of the Jim Crow era?
Successful electoral politics is the art of the possible. Let's figure out how we can get this done and move in the direction of significantly changing the abuse of even the filibuster rule first.
That was a lengthy pause. But Collins's question isn't just for the president. It's really a reminder for lawmakers at all levels, whether it's federal law or a municipal legal code. What's still on the books that deserves a closer look? Are there relics of a bygone era that require re-examination? There are thousands of laws on the books in North Carolina, but does every one of them need to be there?
There's an incentive for legislatures to pass laws, to deal with new problems, right? That's what they get the credit for, right? They pass something, the governor signs it, everyone says, look, job well done, go to the constituents, this will be done.
Rick Sue is a law professor at UNC Chapel Hill. He researches the legal nuances of state and local laws across the country, including in North Carolina.
We have very little sort of incentive and very little attention to the fact that as we keep passing more and more laws, that some of them stick on the books. What ends up happening is it ends up becoming the role of the prosecutor or maybe to some degree the attorney general to decide what to enforce. But that really shouldn't be how we design our laws, right? If it's on the books and people can see as something that this is prohibited and we no longer want it, that should be something that should be revisited.
But state statutes aren't the only rules enshrined by law. There's also the North Carolina Constitution, which adds another wrinkle to the mix.
The Constitution is different from statutes because it binds the state legislature. It binds the entire government as well. So as a result, not only is it above all statutory laws, but we implement in most states a more difficult process by which we amend it. We imagine this is sort of our founding sort of charter document, right, in some ways, that it holds a vaulted position. Now, on the one hand, that makes it harder to change, right, and for purposely so. On the other hand, it might also make it more important to change, given this sort of vaulted status it has and what it's supposed to stand for, right? Sort of the values and norms and constraints and authority of our state government.
North Carolina voters approved a new constitution in 1970. It went into effect in 1971. Since its inception, 51 amendments have been proposed. Voters have supported 41 of them and rejected 10. This more contemporary constitution eliminated poll taxes and more recently provided the governor with a veto. But it has yet to do away with a lingering remnant of a racist past. Still on the books is Article 6, Section 4, a provision requiring eligible voters to pass a literacy test in order to cast a ballot.
It was passed in 1900, right? So this was after Reconstruction. The goal was pretty clear. But it essentially says that every person presenting himself for registration, so this is a registration requirement, shall be able to read and write any section of the Constitution in the English language. So this is not only testing your ability to sort of read, right? It's not just a literacy test. It's also to read and understand and write the Constitution, which is obviously itself also a complex document. Now, one thing that should be noted is that the original version of Section 4 actually had a grandfather provision. So it actually said that this provision, this literacy test, wouldn't apply to anyone who himself or his ancestors had already been registered to vote. So in the time that it was enacted, not only was it requiring a literacy requirement at a time in which actually a good number of North Carolinians were not literate, and maybe not literate in the constitutional text or legalese, but also at a time in which there was this grandfather provision, right? This would extend prior to the Civil War, prior to Reconstruction, that seemed to have grandfathered in all sorts of white citizens with regard to this qualification, whereas really just impacting African Americans. That provision with regard to grandfathering was removed, but this provision survived, and we still have it on the books.
Regardless of your political ideology, you felt that citizens ought to have a right to vote and that the Constitution shouldn't be encumbered with something that's a vestige of an era when, by law, we tried to suppress the ability of certain citizens to participate fully in the political process.
This is Representative Kelly Alexander. He's a Democrat representing District 107 in Mecklenburg County. Earlier this month, Alexander introduced House Bill 337 proposing an amendment to the state constitution to repeal the literacy test requirement. On Tuesday afternoon, Alexander's bill was unanimously approved by a judiciary committee in the state House. This legislation now needs to move through two more committees before it would get a full vote in the chamber.
Somebody who just reads the Constitution or hears about that constitutional provision and don't know what's been going on in terms of its unenforceability may assume that I can't go and register to vote without going through a literacy test. And of course, we do not want that kind of wrong impression to be out there.
A proposed amendment to the state constitution must first receive 3/5 approval from both legislative chambers. Then, a simple majority of voters must approve the change. Then, the amendment goes back to the legislature for what is called implementing language. In other words, changing the state constitution is not a quick or easy process. Representative Alexander introduced a similar bill in 2019. However, it died in legislative Siberia, aka the House Rules Committee. This time, though, he feels more confident about its prospects after having a conversation with Senate Leader Phil Berger.
And, you know, we had, I think, a very straightforward and frank conversation. And I believe that should everything go smoothly on the House side, that this time the Senate will, at a minimum, consider the measure and it'll get a vote on its merits.
When you talk to constituents about this issue, to the extent that it comes up, what are you met with frustration, anger, absurdity, disbelief? Like, what's the general reaction when you say, oh yeah, there's a literacy test still on the books of the North Carolina Constitution?
All of the above. It kind of depends upon where a person comes into the conversation in terms of their knowledge of the North Carolina history and of what the Constitution says. And if you don't know about court interpretations, if you don't know about, you know, history, you can get entirely the wrong impression. In Charlotte, for instance, at one point, there was a city ordinance that had long stopped being enforced, but it required a hitching post to be put out in front of every commercial building in the city. You can't go through Charlotte and you know, at that time, you couldn't find hitching posts, because nobody was riding horses anymore. But yet, until we went through and cleaned up local ordinances, that was a requirement if you were going to build something. The literacy requirement in our Constitution is kind of like that. It's a holdover from another era. It sends an entirely the wrong message. And it's something that once a person becomes aware of it, they begin to agree that it oughtn't to be there, that we ought to just get rid of that and move on.
And this apparent push to remove the literacy test from North Carolina's Constitution, we've been here before. Back in 1970, the amendment actually got on the ballot. Here again is Professor Rick Sue.
It was not close. It was 56-44%. So 56% of the voters wanted to keep this provision in, even though this provision was unenforceable at the time that they voted this. So for whatever reason, that was what the voters felt, that it should still be on the books.
In 1970, the amendment was put forward by then State Representative Henry Fry. Fry was the first black lawmaker elected to the General Assembly in the 20th century. He later became the first black Chief Justice of the state Supreme Court, and his motivations for spearheading the amendment back in 1969 stemmed from his own personal experience. Fry came on the Politics Podcast 2 years ago, and he shared the story about a time he went to register to vote in Richmond County in the mid-1950s.
The gentleman who was handling the registration started asking me questions about signers of the Declaration of Independence and that type thing. And I asked him, why was he asking me these questions? And his answer was that you have to answer these questions, otherwise I will not register you to vote today. And I said, well, I thought the only thing I needed to do was be able to read read and write section of the Constitution, and which showed that I was literate, and be a person who's qualified in the county. And he said, well, if you don't answer these questions, I'm not going to allow you to register to vote. And we went around and around and around, and we never got off that, so I left. I went to a lawyer friend of mine and talked with him and told him what happened. And he told me to talk to the chair of the Board of Elections, and if I had any problem, come back to him. So I talked with the chairman of the Board of Elections, and the next time I went to register, I had no problem whatsoever.
Henry Fry's 1969 proposal was on the ballot a year later. There, it failed to gain the support of the people. Now, 41 years later, Alexander says he's trying to pick up where Fry left off.
The North Carolina Constitution kind of reads like a long, short story. An argument can be made that there are things that are in the Constitution that should be in legislation and not in the Constitution. But I have learned that it's hard enough to get one thing accomplished. So let's deal with getting that done first before we take out the bush axe and start talking about some of the other things that may be in there.
North Carolina is not the only state that still has a literacy test on the books. Professor Sue notes none of these archaic laws really have any teeth.
Yeah, so at the time that this was going on, it certainly was extremely common, if not entirely widespread in the southern states, and most of them did encode it into the Constitution. Remember, right, putting in the Constitution means a future legislature cannot easily change it in that particular regard, and I think that was the goal, right? There was a lot of sort of back and forth during the Reconstruction with regard to who was going to control, right? Democrats or Republican, who was going to control the legislature? So that was very common. But it should be noted that the literacy test actually extends beyond the South, that there were many other states that also had it. Massachusetts, for example, had it. Some of it was targeting, as it was the case in North Carolina, blacks. In other communities, they were targeting immigrants. So in some ways, that level of discrimination was quite widespread and common. And these kind of restrictions on the ability to vote was also quite common as well.
If I were to go to vote a year from now-ish in the spring primary of 2022 at an early voting or at my primary day polling location, I live in Wake County, what is to stop Wake County Board of Elections officials, Wake County pollsters, from administering some form of literacy test to me?
So the only thing stopping it right now is federal law, right? So when the Voting Rights Act was passed in 1965, it banned for a certain number of states, of North Carolina was one of the covered states at that time, suspended and then later banned the literacy test and also poll taxes. Later on, when that Voting Rights Act was amended, that ban became permanent and applied to everyone. So right now, by statute, by federal law, a literacy test or any sort of test and device that would limit registration or voting is considered illegal. But that does raise something, right? Which is the only thing that's banning enforcement of this constitutional provision, which would be mandatory, right? If nothing banned it, right? Because it's in the Constitution, is a federal statute. And it should be noted that that federal statute has been attacked and the Supreme Court has been eroding it over the last few years. And there's a few cases coming up to erode other sections of it, though it hasn't affected this part yet. And moreover, because it's a federal statute, Congress can always repeal it, right? This provision actually survived a Supreme Court constitutional review. So technically, it is constitutional. It is just illegal under statute. But Congress can change the statute anytime they want. And certainly, we're in a time in which there's a lot of movement with regard to voter qualification and voting rights at both the state and federal level.
But come on. We're not really close to being in a place where we're going to have a literacy test that's going to come back or be of greater prominence or possible implementation, are we?
So on the one hand, I think that's right. I mean, certainly, you know, in the erosion by the Supreme Court, they actually mentioned the ban on literacy tests of the reason why they are more willing to erode other sections of the VRA. So maybe the Supreme Court, assuming that, you know, that majority still holds, would then see this literacy ban as categorically different from the other things that they want to overrule. On the other hand, I think, and this goes back to the vote that we were talking about earlier, it sends a symbolic message, right? Given the sort of history behind this, given the intent behind this, the fact that it's still on the books, the fact that the voters refuse to remove it, even though other provisions were changed, I think does send a message about how we think about that legacy or that past, or how we think about voting going forward.
A literacy test is by no means the only provision on the books in North Carolina that could benefit from another look. I asked Rick Sue about a few others. For example, same-sex marriage is technically still illegal in North Carolina, but as of the moment, that state law is superseded by a federal court ruling.
You know, you're absolutely correct, and it's by federal constitutional law, though, of course, by an interpretation of the Supreme Court, which, again, can be changed by the Supreme Court. So you're absolutely right, right? We have laws not only with regard to same-sex marriage or prohibiting it, but we also have laws prohibiting sort of sexual activities or conduct among same-sex couples in a relationship, right, in that particular case. Both of those are unconstitutional. But again, right, in some ways, there's two issues here. One is whether or not those constitutional precedents change, right? The court is constantly changing. The court has become politicized. So in some ways, depending on how the court renders future decisions, the prohibition on those laws may go away. Second of all, right, they're still on the books, right? So in that sense, North Carolina is still saying, but for the federal Supreme Court, we would want to enforce it in this way. Now, maybe that's the case. Maybe that's how North Carolina feels. Maybe that's what North Carolina's identity is. But if that is not North Carolina's identity, if we do not longer believe that those are legitimate, I think there's still a responsibility in some ways to say, okay, well, let's revisit these particular laws because this is an expression of what we feel as a state with regard to what we would do, but for, in this case, the Supreme Court of the federal government getting in the way.
It's symbolic, right? Like, we've talked a lot about the enforceability and oral sex, anal sex. These are things that are illegal in North Carolina. Those are pretty private things. There's no way to enforce those. Was there ever a way to enforce that or interrogate people? Or is it really more of a symbolic effort or entity?
And I would, in response to that, I would say it's both symbolic, but the symbolism itself and how it can be wielded, even if there's no enforcement, even if there's not a prosecution, right, becomes important in how it actually affects people's lives, right? It's a chilling effect. It allows, let's say, investigations into things under pursuit of these laws that even if they don't lead to charges, which they might, right, leads to essentially the government invading and terrorizing and going after specific individuals. And it's important to note that the prohibitions that you talked about, at least under North Carolina law, doesn't just apply to, let's say, individuals in the LGBT community. It applies a lot of those activities to heterosexual activity as well. So we really are talking about sort of the government in your bedrooms. And even if they are not in your bedrooms at all time to enforce those laws, the fact that it's there, the fact that they could threaten it, right? The fact that they can do an investigation with regard to that or target specific people, right? Because they suspect that there might be something going on, almost as a pretext because they want to go after them for another reason. Those are also cause for concern as well.
These vestiges of a bygone era range from discriminatory to symbolic to potentially silly, with places in between. Still, in North Carolina, it is illegal to consume or sell alcohol in any room where bingo is being played. No, you can't drive a vehicle on the sidewalk. And indeed, at several beaches along the coast, thong bikinis are prohibited. Finally, on a decidedly different note, North Carolina Senator Tom Tillis announced this week he has prostate cancer. The two-term Republican senator will undergo surgery next week. In a statement, the 60-year-old said in part, quote, "I am blessed that my cancer was detected relatively early, and I can't emphasize enough how important routine screenings are, regardless of how healthy you think you are. I had no symptoms and would have never imagined I had cancer." Close quote. If you or somebody you know is seeking free prostate cancer screening in the event that you don't have health care, you can visit the website zerocancer.org. This episode of the Politics Podcast was produced by the talented Charlie Shelton Ormond. Please join us again on Friday when we review the week's state political happenings. Until then, I'm Jeff Tabiri. Thank you for listening.